You're listening to Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association with host John Hansen. Today's show is sponsored by attorney Patrick Dolan at Conte & Dolan and attorney Ed Wallace, partner at the firm Wallace Miller. Now, here's John Hansen and Let's Get Legal.
At 209 on WGN. Very good Saturday afternoon, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us, despite the weather. Well, it looks like it kind of stopped raining out here downtown. I don't know what it's doing by you. I hope everyone's having a great Saturday. Maybe you're running around doing some last minute. Well, it's not last minute yet. Some holiday shopping. We're going to drive around and look at the lights tonight. I don't know what the plan is, but we appreciate you listening here to WGN. It's Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. We got a new friend of the show, Ed Wallace. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
You're from Wallace Miller.
I am.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. Where'd you grow up?
Oh, you know what? My father was in the Air Force.
So everywhere?
Yeah, everywhere. California, Germany, South Carolina.
Uh-huh.
So
you moved around a bunch.
Yep, yep.
And how'd you settle on law as a profession?
My mom says that I was always ready for the law. but I wound up in law school. First of all, excuse me for a second.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Eastern Illinois undergrad.
Mm-hmm.
I then went to DePaul for law school in Chicago here.
And why? Why law? This is because your mom said that, and you're like,
I'm still
go.
Trying to figure that out.
I think a lot of lawyers think that as well. And, you know, when you were in law school, was your dream mass litigation stuff?
No. I always wanted to help people. My first job out of college was as a social worker.
Can you move that mic a little closer to you, my friend? There you go.
My first job out of school was as a social worker.
Uh-huh.
So as a social worker, I work with people that were, you know, some people had dementia, some people were just, you know, older and needing some help, and I always wanted to help people, so I think that brought me to the law.
Okay. And right out of the gate, who'd you work for? You don't have to say the name, but like generally speaking, what did
you
do?
Yeah, I'm not going to say the name. So I was a defense lawyer defending big companies right out of law school. My heart was always in helping people, though. And putting aside the fact that I have a lot of friends that are on the other side of the V, I enjoyed it. I did it for 5 years. But from the get-go, I wanted to be helping people. I wanted to be representing plaintiffs. I want to represent the little guy, the regular folks that got hurt in some way, whether it was economically, whether or not they were injured. You know, I just wanted to do that and sort of found my way there after 5 years.
Well, yeah. It's interesting, though, that juxtaposition of wanting to help the little guy and working for big companies. Was there a moment in which the metal met the road and you realized you were maybe doing not what you wanted to do, representing the big companies?
Well, I'm not going to say the name, but I'll tell you a story. So I was in the back of a car. We were out in the western suburbs of Chicago here, and we were representing a big company. This company had killed somebody, basically their machine had, and their machine didn't have a backup alarm. We knew it going in. We knew that the case was difficult for us. I was in the car with an expert that we'd hired that we'd paid lots of money to, you know, inspect the device, et cetera, et cetera. To me, it was relatively straightforward. The thing didn't have a backup alarm. It was supposed to have a backup alarm. It didn't.
Mm-hmm.
We should have settled the case right away. That was in my head from the get-go. Me being the young, dumb associate sitting in the back of the car with the big senior partner thinking that I'm hot stuff with the expert, I happened to say in the car, and I'll never forget it because the look on this guy's face turning around, you know, you think it's Big Daddy turning around looking at you, and this is a big guy to begin with. So I'm sitting in the back of the car, and I say, hey, listen, you know, why aren't we just resolving this case? You know, why isn't this over?
Like, clearly it was this company's fault.
Right. I'd seen the documents. I'd seen the injuries. You know, I didn't know the plaintiff, obviously, because I represented the big company. But, you know, it took us like 4 years to get to the settlement table. And that, you know, I was only there five. So, you know, that was one of the dumber things I probably said in front of an expert, you know, and in front of a senior partner.
But it was honest.
But it was honest. And so I knew where I wanted to be. I'm still really good friends, by the way, with that senior partner who is now a very prominent lawyer here in Chicago. But he knew what I wanted to do was to be on the other side. So,
right.
So here I am.
Right. I mean, lawyers got jobs to do, representing big companies. Big companies deserve representation just like anyone else.
And when I was a defense lawyer, I used to say everybody's entitled to a defense. So, and there are cases that are not popular that sometimes are brought in bad faith. But I like to say, as somebody who's on this side of the V, that...
What do you say on the other side of the V? I've never heard that phrase before. What does that mean? That.
You know, that's lingo I use. I don't know if I picked it up somewhere or whatever. But plaintiffs are the people that have been injured in some way. Right.
Versus,
so
I got it.
So-and-so versus so-and-so.
I got it.
Right? And plaintiff being the party that's brought the lawsuit. So I represent people and sue companies for a living. And so the first thing I like to tell them is, listen, I was on the other side. And the first thing I'll tell you is, you got to think long and hard about bringing this case, because what you think is at the end is often not at the end, though we try. And sometimes we're successful, but not always. And so, you know, the way I do it is having been on the other side, I know that every time, especially in the kind of cases that we're in, we're going to have a formidable defense. It's going to be a long road. You know, the client, more likely than not, is going to be burnt out, right? And tired, and they're going to be put through the paces. And so I let them know that at the outset of the case. But I'm really excited about what I do.
For sure. We're going to dive more into exactly it is what you do. I want to find out exactly the differences between class action or mass litigation, mass tort litigation. We'll do that next. Oh, by the way, wallacemiller.com is where you can reach their team. Ed Wallace on the other side of things from Wallace Miller. If you missed the first segment, he used to represent big companies, defending them against lawsuits, and discovered his, well, as always, that he wanted to defend, I don't want to say the little guy, right? I mean, the person that needs, I mean, for a lot of people that end up working with you, whatever the case is, no matter how big, some of these people are coming to you, I don't know, some of the worst days of their life, right?
Well, that's exactly. You know, I did an orientation. We just hired a bunch of new people at the firm. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately for me, business is good. Because when business is good, that means people are hurt. So I had an orientation the other day, and I said, you know, listen, you're here at work. There's going to be days that you're not at your best. Nobody can ever guarantee that you got to be 100%, but you got to try. Because when those people call, the bottom line is that's the worst day of their lives, right? And so you got to think about who you're talking to, why you're talking. Some clients call very agitated. I haven't heard from you in a while. I'm upset. I'm not happy with the pace of the case. Why is it taking so long? We get that a lot. You know, unfortunately, the wheels of justice grind pretty darn slow.
Right.
You know, and people rightly, I think, criticize that. But the reality is, you know, we are dealing with people and at their worst. And so it's a tough, you know, the people that I work with, the staff, the paralegals especially, you know, they have to be commended, because they're literally sometimes on the phone getting very, very private health information. I mean, I could tell you about some of the cases that we've handled that are just so, you know, clients have to testify. And once they've testified in a court or testified a lot of times by deposition, that stuff is public. They're putting their lives out there. So they're taking a step forward. So
talking about injuries, talking about mental situations going through. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So you've got to have a team that understands that delicate nature. And in many ways, you're not psychologists, but you in many ways help people through that kind of journey.
For sure. For sure. And it's sometimes it's tough to put it down, right? And I mean, I still think about clients this day. When I get Christmas cards from clients or I get birthday cards, I still, you know, it still makes my day. But, you know, we have a great staff. We have a nurse that was a 27-year oncologist nurse. She was a president of the American Bar Association's legal nurse consultants. We have great attorneys that used to do what I do, where they defended big companies, some of them. Some of them came to us straight out of law school. But, you know, I'm proud of what we do.
Mm-hmm. Let's dive a little bit more into what you do. And, you know, maybe we can get to some of the bigger stuff, too, as we go. But do you do like personal injury law for just individuals, or is it always bigger cases?
You know, that's a good question. Let me try to break it down if I can. So when we talk about mass torts, I heard you telling the audience about mass torts earlier and, you know, like, what is it?
Mm-hmm.
What I like to tell people is think about what the words mean, mass and tort. And tort, you know, the first thing I think of when I think of a tort is someone being negligent. And you think about negligent, that being a legal term. Well, that's just the failure to exercise reasonable care. You know, and since we're sitting in Chicago with, you know, in this beautiful studio years, looking around the city. Most people coming in the city take the train, or they take a bus, or they take the L, right? Mm-hmm. So think about a bunch of people. The conductor that day is, you know, maybe playing on his betting app as opposed to paying attention. He takes the corner too quickly. He's got 300 or 400 people on the L train with him, and the L goes off the tracks. Unfortunately, it's happened before.
Mm-hmm.
Let's hope it doesn't happen again. But if you think about the words mass and a tort, it was one person's actions that caused something really, really bad to happen. And so when you use the word personal injury, again, think about that too. It's personal to them. So it's not a class action in the sense that one person can represent everybody. All of these people have been hurt in varying ways. There was somebody maybe sitting at the front of that train that's really, really injured, maybe paralyzed for life, right? There might be somebody that was somewhere else that isn't as injured. Somebody might have had lost wage claims and that sort of thing. They all might have gone initially to the same emergency room, but thereafter, their lives and the impact on their lives is all very personal to them. So when you hear those words going forward, I hope you think about it in that way. And it's our job to tell those stories at trial.
So do you represent the woman at the front of the train because she called you individually, or do you try and represent multiple people on that train to try and do this collectively as one? Like, how does that work between one person and their injuries, another person and other injuries, or does it vary by whatever case we're talking about?
Well, I do a lot of pharma work. So, and unfortunately, there's no shortage of wrongdoing in that area. And I happen to represent women particularly because for a period of about 10 years, there was medical device after medical device that would come out and unfortunately hurt a lot of women. And I can tell you a little bit about that if you want. But the way that I would represent, you know, any woman that wanted to hire me who had that medical device implanted in her and who sustained personal injuries could retain me. And so I've represented women by the thousands, if not, you know, 5 to 10,000 at any given time.
And do you find that case because you start noticing calls to the office, or maybe one woman has...
Great question.
Yeah, like how does it start to go where you go, wait, hold on, this isn't just an individual claim, this is much bigger than
that. Okay, can I tell you another story?
Yeah, please. Okay. You can tell me as many stories as you want, Ed.
All right, so here's what happened with what I like to call the transvaginal mesh debacle. So I'm literally in my office and I'm getting calls from women who said, listen, I know you're working on this hernia mesh case, but I had transvaginal mesh and I'm really hurt. And I'm like, what are you talking
about?
What
is this? Right.
And this was like 2008, 2009-ish. Okay. I can't remember the exact year. It's been a bit. I have one case left in the office after representing approximately 5,000 women over the last decade. So lo and behold, I find out that what has happened is that there's this physician in Europe that had taken a piece of hernia mesh. And, you know, hernia being, you know, typically in the stomach,
right,
or inguinal.
A lot of our listeners have experienced that.
Okay,
yeah.
Right. A lot of people have.
So there's a mesh that holds everything in place.
That's right. But it's put, you know, it's put in the stomach. It's not close to the bladder or, you know, in this case, it's not inserted through the vagina, mm-hmm. which is what transvaginal means. Mm-hmm. And so there's this doctor in Europe. He invents this device. Johnson & Johnson pays him upwards of $100 million or so for his invention. All these other pharmaceutical companies look at what's going on and they're like, hey, wait a second. We don't want to see Johnson & Johnson get out there first. We're going to invent our own devices. We're going to take our old hernia mesh, which is heavy and big, and we're just going to put it together as a kit.
Right.
And we're going to, quote unquote, train surgeons on how to insert this in a woman's vagina
right.
to help solve her stress urinary incontinence.
Okay.
Bad stuff happens next.
So you start to identify that you're getting calls, you're doing
Absolutely.
Research, and then you realize that, okay, we're going to have a lawsuit on our hands.
Right.
Is it then like a strength in numbers thing where you say, there's other women that must be experiencing this, let's find them? Like, I think a lot of people, the classic example when we talk about class action lawsuits, or like big lawsuits now, we think of Camp Lejeune because there's commercials that air
right.
and we find them. And I think a lot of people sometimes roll their eyes, or it's become a meme now because we just hear it so often, not to discredit the people that are legitimately have gone
right.
through terrible things. But like, how do you as a firm then go, there must be other women out there? Do you seek them out? Do you want more clients? Not only because obviously that's business, but also because you want to
sure.
help more people? Like, what is that line like? What's that conversation like?
Let's take my example a step forward.
Okay.
So I have to hire experts,
right?
You can't get through a case without having experts that can talk about the design. You can't get through the case without looking at the documents. And in a big case like that, there's probably 10, 20 million documents that are going to cost you millions of dollars to review. You literally have to have your own army to take on one of these cases.
Right.
So you... If I can be frank, only a lunatic would take on one client and spend $5 million and of his own money, which is what we do.
Right.
Of our money, we literally write the checks. We advance the cost. And we don't get paid unless we're successful. So the only way that we can literally stay in business is to represent. And think about it. If it's done correctly, and I get the criticisms, but if it's done correctly, it works really well.
Right.
Because I can get on a plane and I can go to London and I can meet with the best chemist in the world or the best toxicologist in the world. Or when we were doing the mesh cases, we were going to Germany. We went to Brussels. We went all over the world writing checks like crazy. And if I hadn't had that many clients, it didn't make economic sense.
Right. So it would actually be, you end up helping more people by spreading out and trying to get a bunch of clients who have been legitimately hurt and affected by something. And in fact, you may not be able to help individual, like helping an individual would be such a Herculean task.
One person,
the strength in numbers actually helps all of them. The rising tide lifts all ships, I guess you could say, right, in that way.
Well, the internet has changed everything. I mean, back in 08, I thought, because I thought I was a good lawyer, I thought people would call me.
No matter what, right.
There's something called the internet, you know?
Right.
And there were advertisements on the internet. I mean, I think even the late night shows got into the whole transvaginal mesh story. And there are memes and stuff like that. But you know, there is a method to the madness, and in my opinion, that's the only way it can work, because you're not going to have a big company like Johnson & Johnson, who, you know, they're a big company, right? Hundreds of subsidiaries.
Right.
You know, they're not just going to lay down.
They have a team, a huge team.
Yeah.
You used to be one of the people on one of those teams, not for that company, but for companies.
Well, I'm repenting.
Right. I'm not trying to judge you. I just mean you know what you're up against.
I am. Some very good lawyers who do a great job.
Right.
Right? I mean, you know, but we take the first case that we ever took to trial in the transvaginal mesh case. I was one of the co-lead lawyers. I co-led a trial in, of all places, in West Virginia. And the money that we spent on that one case for that one person getting there was millions and millions and millions of dollars.
Just to even get in the courtroom that day.
Absolutely.
And then from there, so that was for one person, or was that for one person?
And she got a $3.27 million verdict, which is a lot of money.
Right.
But the reality is, given the money that I had spent to date on her case, right, she's like the bellwether client. She's the one out front trying to sort of establish values. And, you know, we're taking what we hope are our more representative cases so we can look at verdicts and results and get the company to settle.
So when you have all these clients for this one specific thing, you still try and take one person to court against one company as almost a trial balloon to see what works, what doesn't, and how to adjust moving forward for the rest of the clients?
Right. I mean, in the case alone, there was about 100,000 women that had transvaginal mesh cases. So if you think about all the courtrooms in the country, we'd be trying cases for the next 200 years.
Yeah.
Right? So it's impossible. So they have, typically in most states or certainly in federal court, there's something called a bellwether process where the parties are supposed to pick representative cases to go to trial.
Oh, I see. That's interesting. And then do you extrapolate from that one case, or is the goal then to find settlements for everybody else or something? Like, what happens next?
You know, putting aside what I do for a living, I'm a believer in peace, right? Mm-hmm. I told you at the get-go, you tell clients you're going to be put through the ringer. This one client, who, by the way, was from Illinois, but we had
the bellwether one.
She was from Central Illinois. She's doing very well, I might add.
Great, good.
Better. I mean, can't ever take the pain away from her, but she's doing much better now. So to make a long story short, the idea is we get verdicts out of that. And there's been cases. I mean, the Xarelto litigation, which is a blood thinner litigation, there were 5 defense verdicts in a row. And you can guess what the value of those settlements were. They were very, very small.
Right. This is fascinating. We got a break for the news. WallaceMiller.com is where people can reach you. Do you have a phone number you want people to call you guys at?
Sure. I'd say 312.
Okay.
261-6193.
Okay, that's 312-261-7693. I got that. Did I get that right? Did I type it wrong? We'll do it. We'll tell you what, let's go to the news. We'll double check our sources. WallaceMiller.com, I know for sure, is where people can go. And I'm learning a lot today. Ed Wallace is the teacher from Wallace Miller. We're all going to a little law school here today. This is fascinating. Thanks for walking us through this stuff.
Oh, thank you. It's fun.
If you're just joining us, Ed and his team do a lot of big cases, mass tort litigation, class action lawsuits. By the way, is there a difference between those two phrases?
There's a massive difference.
Really?
And you've been thrown on our website quite a bit.
Yeah.
One of my colleagues wrote a great article about the differences. Suffice it to say, it's way beyond the time we have allowed here.
Okay.
but if you go there and you want to read about it, I think it's a great article.
Okay.
Because I get that question all the time. But can I give you like the 1 minute?
Please answer? Give me the 1 minute.
So when we go to mass torts and personal injury, right, all of those people have individual cases. They all have the right to have their day in court individually.
Okay.
And typically speaking, in a mass tort, somebody's been negligent and somebody's been hurt.
Like the train example you gave.
Perfect. Yeah. Great. Now, in class actions, those are not typically personal injury actions. They're normally economic claims. And so what the law says there is one person, you only need one client, not thousands, to step up and stand in the shoes of everybody else.
One person represents the whole group.
Exactly. And then those cases are proven, usually with the defendant's own documents. We're talking about antitrust violations where somebody's been accused of price fixing. There was just a trial here in Chicago over the prices of chickens, mm-hmm. for example.
Okay.
Price fixing. I mean, you know. And so one entity or one person can step in the shoes of everybody else. And then at the end, there's typically an economist or somebody else like that that comes in and is able to calculate the damages to each individual member. And then you get the postcard in the mail. You see something on the website, or there was a massive settlement on Facebook.
Right, exactly. Hey, so I've been part of a class action lawsuit.
There you go.
But someone else did the representing of me.
That's right.
Whereas mass tort, I would be more personally injured.
Right.
And I would be demanding my day in court.
You'd be telling your own story there.
So what you do, and you talked about this with this this mesh, this transvaginal mesh, is you had 100,000 women that were affected by this, and you went to court in West Virginia, you won, and then you had to go to court in other places, because at the end,
I did.
The end goal, I imagine, just for, I mean, if everyone wants a day in court, so be it. They can have their day in court, and I'm sure you're still dealing with some of those cases. But at the end of the day, there are probably people that would be willing to settle, but you've got to get the attention of this big company to eventually go, it's not going to behoove you to fight this every single case, right?
Yeah, that yes, exactly right. We tried a number of cases. I mean, 6 weeks before that, I tried a case in Boston State Court over the Boston Scientific product and lost. And we got that case reversed on appeal, by the way.
Good, congrats.
And eventually settled it. And then later on, same company, not Boston Scientific, this time Johnson & Johnson, I tried a case against them in Hammond, Indiana, of all places. And we were able to represent someone from Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful, wonderful lady. She had had revision surgery as a result of the transvaginal mesh. And we got a $35 million verdict.
Whoa, $35 million.
Yeah. So when you start, you know, getting those kinds of numbers, they start to call you.
Uh-huh.
You know?
I bet.
But again, then you have clients who are saying, well, wait a second, where's my money at? Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the problem that happens, and you know, we live in an imperfect world, right? So the problem that I have very difficult conversations with clients sometimes, because you tell them, if you want to be 80 years old waiting for your trial date, that's fine. Or you can have this resolution now. And somebody like Johnson & Johnson, and again, I'm not trying to cast aspersions here,
right,
but they'll, if their CEO was asked, he'd probably say, I want to make myself a hard target. You're going to come and have to earn it. I remember being told that by their lawyer. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to go earn it. And then we tattooed them, right? So, you know, that's what it takes. And typically these cases are brought one person at a time, so they know that they can play the delay game, and they do it, and they do it very well.
So you win a $35 million verdict for one woman, and that's great, because then Johnson & Johnson will call you and say, okay, let's maybe try and settle some of these and done with. But then some of your individual clients see that $35 million and they think, well, I kind of want that money. And Johnson & Johnson's not going to settle and say, or any big company's not going to say, well, the biggest verdict, that's what everyone's going to get.
Right. And I tell them, you know what, you're entitled to it, but, you know, it has to be earned. And so if you have the right to go pursue the case, try the case, you know, but the reality is that the settlements are not going to match that. They're not going to be those numbers.
So then when you get a call from a big company, then your firm, then who you, with all the women you represent, or men in different cases, you reach out to them, they say, here's what the offer is. Yay or nay? And it doesn't take a mass vote. Each individual gets to make their own decision there.
Right. So typically the, you know, not to get into terms and name names and that sort of thing, but, you know, when these are done on a mass basis, sometimes they're settled individually. I had a case once, I told you I had the, unfortunately, women were, in my opinion, by and large, harmed by medical devices at a much higher rate than men are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
it doesn't shock me. No.
Yeah, exactly. So there was a birth control case that I had, and it was supposed to be the latest and greatest new generation birth control pill. Caused strokes. There was no warning about it. We allege the company knew about it. I would sit down every 2 weeks with the defense lawyer. here in Chicago, and we would go through one by one each of the clients, and I would make a pitch as to why Susie Jones or Susie Q deserve more money. That's my favorite case of all time because, one, they got really, really, really good settlements, and a lot of these were young women who either had children or wanted to have children.
So you're giving individual settlements there.
Yes.
It's not a blanket. You're saying this person was maybe on this drug longer and they have more ramifications.
Yes.
This person deserves more money.
Right.
So they can be individual settlements even if they are a massive...
They always are.
Huh.
They
okay.
always are individual settlements. There's
oh,
other settlements that are, you know, the company may say to them, you know, may say to me, I'll settle for X amount in the aggregate, and you work
you
with the special master to figure it out with your own clients, and then you have to hire ethicists, and it gets quite involved. And that process itself sometimes takes a year or two.
Wow. Yeah, I imagine working through that. But I mean, that must be those calls that you get to make to these clients, these people who have suffered. I mean, that must be the personal reward for you, right, Ed? Like, I mean, knowing that they can not only a financial quote unquote a financial something they deserve, money they deserve, but that it's over.
Maybe. For sure.
Is that what keeps you going in this gig?
It does. It does. And also the losses, right?
Hmm.
I mean, there's been cases. I told you about the Xarelto litigation. Those are some of the hardest conversations you can have with a client where you know a client has been hurt. You know in your heart that the drug or whatever it was caused the harm, but it hasn't been proven in court. And so you're sitting there having a discussion with the client saying, listen, I wish I could do better, but I can't. And that to me is far and away the toughest part of this job.
Why should people choose you? I think just having met you now for 45 minutes, I imagine people describe you as a fighter.
I am a fighter. I am a fighter. I don't want to toot my own horn, but I think our success speaks for itself. The one thing I can tell you is I surround myself with good people.
Yeah.
You know, we have great lawyers. I left my old firm where I was at for 21 years. Again, going back to my story, defense lawyer for 5 years, worked in another firm for 21 doing what I do. And then a little bit more than 2 years ago, everybody I went to, I said, listen, we're going to go and we're going to start our own brand new firm. And every single one of them said yes.
Hmm.
And I'm super excited about that. So we're essentially an old new firm.
Yeah.
2 years and a month old.
And it takes a team.
It does.
And when you start, the case you were mentioning earlier, there were some international implications to it or ramifications. Or that's where it started. I don't know if you had to go international or if you've ever had to do international, but I mean, we're talking about laws not only in 50 states that are different, you're talking
right.
about laws all over the place. I imagine so much of the work that you do is research. It's reading. It's a team that just knows their way around these cases. Experts, a nurse on staff who knows nursing law or the implications that comes with. You would need a team. There's no way you, Ed, could do this yourself.
You have to retell the story. And so you're looking back in time. And the way that we do it is you want to work with the foremost experts in the world, right, if you can. And you also want to get access to every piece of information that you can. You look for former employees. You know, you're like an investigator. It's like a Matlock episode.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So it's fascinating. If I wasn't doing, and I'll be very frank, if I wasn't doing what I do now,
mm-hmm.
I would not be practicing law.
Really? This is the only thing you would want to do in the law?
It's the only thing I want to do.
I love that. We got to take a break. I got the number all settled out here. 312-261-6193. 312-261-6193. Having heard our conversation for the last 45 minutes, if someone's listening, who should be calling you? Is it someone that may have been harmed by something that they think of or their friend is? Or maybe they know of a couple people in their scenarios? Or can it be just, hey, something happened to me? I don't know if it happened to anyone
Absolutely.
Else.
Absolutely. We don't only do mass torts.
Okay.
So we do class actions, which I've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
But we also, there are people that get injured because of a product and it only injured them.
Okay.
So we do product liability cases. You know, we do what I call single event cases where there was a single event that affected someone's life in an extraordinary way.
Right. So if someone used a product and something happened or something happened on a train, whatever it may be.
Right.
You don't have to be sitting there thinking, well, oh, there's not 100 other people that did this. No, they can call you.
Right.
At least to just talk through something, right?
Sure.
All right. So that number is 312-261-6193, wallacemiller.com. And you and I were talking offline. Just the idea of the stigma against class action lawsuits, the stigma
right.
against personal, the phrase personal injury lawyer. And you said something interesting to me about lawyers in general and being a good or bad publicist for themselves.
Oh, I think lawyers are the worst publicists. I think, and let's be frank, the reality is that there are some bad lawyers, mm-hmm. right? And so one bad apple can run it for a lot of other people. And unfortunately, for a long period of time, there were people that perhaps took advantage of the laws and were just, for example, warehousing clients and settling on the cheap, not respecting what they do for a living. And you know, I like to think that, you know, by and large, I don't run across those lawyers, mm-hmm. not in what I do, you know. And so, you know, the stigma is going to be whatever it is. But again, like I said earlier, I'm proud of what we do.
Yeah. I mean, like, I always bring up the Camp Lejeune thing just because everyone talks about that. And
right.
And I think when people make fun of it, they don't make fun of the people that legitimately were hurt and need help. I think it becomes part of mass culture when there's a bazillion commercials about it.
Right.
And I just hope that people, through the jokes we tell about it or the memes we post, whether about that case or other ones, we realize that there are genuinely people that are hurt. And that, as you said at the beginning, you need a lot of people in order to win some of these cases because it takes so right. much of your financial resources to even start bringing those to trial.
And we have to flip the script, too. We have to look and think about Camp Lejeune. I mean, that was decades and decades of abuse, and you had people that were really hurt. So when I say flip the script, I'm talking about, you know, take the attention away from me. Look at what happened to the people and look at the company's conduct. I mean, and people that have the time and the inclination, when they look at the evidence that has been presented at trial, there's a reason why those juries are delivering those big verdicts, right? Because the documents, and I call myself the eternal optimist, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm going to be hopefully an optimist until the day I pass. But the reality is I've seen decade after decade of bad documents. And as I said earlier in the show, there's no shortage of wrongdoing. And until that stops, which I don't think it ever will, I'm still going to be here.
Right. One thing I've learned from hosting this show now for a couple of years, as the listeners know, I am not a lawyer, though I'm fascinated by lawyers and law, generally speaking, is that we often say that the media is like this fourth estate in government. We are a check on all three branches of government. I feel like lawyers, good lawyers, are the check on corporations, are the check on the big guy over the little guy, right?
Do you feel that? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Your car's safer because of it. Right?
Right.
Your lawnmower has a guard on the end of it because of it.
Right.
I mean, so
these weren't companies out of the goodness of their heart. So, I mean, the companies are, I don't want to disparage too many.
Not at all.
They have an interest in safety because literally that I don't think they want their customers to get hurt generally. But sometimes, unless they are forced to do something, they are not going to do it.
Yeah, unfortunately, we come after the fact. But I there's a litany of examples, which we obviously don't have time for, where there's been great work that's been done that leads to a good outcome. It's not always like that, but we try.
Yeah, for sure. 312-981-7200 if anyone has any last-minute thoughts on the matter. We get a lot of great texts about how fascinating the conversation is. You were mentioning products earlier, and, you know, someone was worried about using a product you mentioned. It's because of work like you that, like you said, products become safer. People can trust their doctor still. That's an important thing. I don't want people to like walk around worried all day about every little product.
All. There's a lot of people doing a lot of great work. There's people that go to work every day just like I do, trying to make a better product, a better life for themselves, their family, and the company they work for. But like I said, there's always that element of society that wants to make a buck or two that they probably don't deserve, and guess what happens? And enter me.
Right, for sure. You got a great team behind you. You represent folks all across the country, right?
I do.
You're based out of Chicago. So do the majority of your calls come from Chicagoans, or is it from anybody?
It's from everywhere. I was in Cleveland on Thursday and Friday on a brand new case, investigating a case. I can't talk about it right now.
That's fine.
The week before that, right over Thanksgiving, I ran out to California on a case. I mean, it just is what it is. You know?
Right, because I mean, these companies that you fight against, they sell products all over the place,
all over the world, and oftentimes, as we find out, they start to get reports of adverse events overseas
first,
and the regulations are very different over there. There's even products here that they can sell that they can't sell over there, but that's for another show.
Yeah,
right. But the bottom line is that there's evidence that comes from everywhere, and so we stay busy.
All right. You got about a minute left. This is always like the elevator pitch thing. I know you didn't come here just to get a bunch of new clients, but if someone out there is experiencing something, why should they? I know you don't like to toot your own home, but toot it for a second, Ed. Why Wallace Miller?
We're real. I mean, we do what we do because we care. I can speak for everybody in the firm when I say you're not going to get, you know, some canned elevator speech. I like to say even when people, we work under the laws of common sense. And if you don't have a case, we're going to tell you you don't have a case. We're not going to promise you something that we can't deliver. I mean, we like to make the promise and keep it that we're going to do the best job we can. And I think that, you know, we live in a society now where everything's amplified. There's this gigantic expectations. And, you know, we've had the ability to deliver on that,
mm-hmm.
right? We have a long track record. I've been doing it for a long time, and I think for the right reasons. And so, and I hate to repeat myself, but I'll say I'm proud of that.
No, you should be. 312-261-6193, wallacemiller.com. And Ed's a Blackhawks fan, so...
I am.
You know I'm a fan of you.
First-time season tickets this year.
Congratulations.
I got him at the right time, didn't I?
Right. You like that dope on the Jumbotron?
I do. He's a great guy.
Yeah, you walked in and you know that look in your eye. You're like, I think I've seen that person before. We appreciate you joining us here. You're part of the WGN family now. It means we call you whenever you get ready to be annoyed by me with dumb questions about big lawsuits that happen. Okay?
I really appreciate your time.
This has been great. All right, we're going to take a break. Again, that number 312-261-6193. All right, that's going to do it for Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Appreciate you joining us. Appreciate all the questions we got. And 734 chimed in. Great conversation. We appreciate that. And 708 says the WGN family's grown by one today. Sure has. We love having new folks on to join our conversations. And at the end of the day, what this show is designed to do, I think you heard it through Patrick Dolan and our conversation with Ed, is we want to help you, the listener. And that's always our goal. We have these experts on, but if at the nothing else, I just like to learn myself a little bit more about these things that impact all of us, and I hope you do too. We will be back at our normal time live next week on the 23rd, and we will do the trial of the Grinch. We're going to have some fun. We'll have a prosecutor and a defense attorney. We'll play clips of the Grinch, and we'll find out what laws he broke or didn't break.